Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, a residential remodeling company guided by discipline, preparation, and attention to detail. Call Mosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. This Tuesday, Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe delivered the 2026 State of the State Address from the Capitol in Jefferson City. STLPR State House reporter Sarah Kellogg and politics correspondent Jason Rosenbaum sat down with the governor later that afternoon to learn more about Kehoe's priorities for the coming year.
The centerpiece of your speech is a ballot item that would phase the income tax out over 5 years and allow the legislature to place a sales tax on services. So to be clear, if voters reject this, there will be no income tax elimination?
Well, we currently have a plan in place with what they call Senate Bill 509, where there's a series of triggers where the income tax would come down. There's several pieces of legislation that would remove that floor. Unfortunately, that will take it's well-intended, but it would take decades to get to the plan there. So that would be still in place, but the plan we're proposing happens on a much quicker time frame.
Missourians overwhelmingly banned sales taxes on services in 2016. Why do you think they would reverse this, especially since they may not want to pay more money for things like an Audible subscription or a Fortnite battle pass?
Well, because this will put more money in their pocket. The general revenue that we collect from Missouri income taxes is nearly $9 billion. And if you put $9 billion back into Missourians' pockets, I believe they'll spend the money and it will have a more positive effect than if government was spending that money.
Well, you said in your speech you don't want to tax real estate, healthcare, or agriculture. Do you really think that just taxing certain services will be enough to prevent a budget hole that's so big that state government can't function?
Well, I think widening the sales tax base to a more modern tax economy, as I mentioned, our current tax code was written in 1935. And if your listeners think about the things that they've purchased in the last few days or last few minutes, most of those things probably weren't around in 1935. So moving away from the checkbook economy more to the economy that we're used to right now, I think is a good move.
There are a lot of states that do not have an income tax, but they have other major sources of income. Florida has tourism, Disney World, Texas and Alaska have oil and natural resources. Nevada has gambling. Tennessee has Dolly Parton. What does Missouri have that will allow the state to sustain budgets without an income tax?
Yeah, well, we have our tourism industry, number one. Our agriculture industry is clearly number one. But our tourism industry is in the top two or three things that affect our economy. And that also helps with visitors coming into Missouri that are paying sales tax. So some of the burden gets shifted to our visitors, but not, and as you heard me say, we're not doing double-digit sales tax increases. That would be insane. Our plan will call for only the amount of money required to offset the income tax so that future legislators can't be in a runaway position to overtax Missourians.
Your budget would cut around $600 million from general revenue spending, including more than $270 million from the Department of Social Services, which, by the way, I should mention for our listeners, I don't know what the total budget for DSS is, but it's in the billions. So $270 million, while not insignificant, is not catastrophic. But will that make it harder for the state to deliver critical services like Medicaid, food assistance, and child welfare?
We won't attack or touch any of those things. We had all of our department directors go through a exercise in every department on what certain cuts they could get by with that would not affect essential services such as children's services, etc. And we're really confident in what that department has put forward to us will be achieved through, you know, some efficiency and some other things. But yeah, I don't the average Missourian, I don't think we'll see an effect to that.
Given that the state will eventually have to pay for its portion of Medicaid expansion in a couple of years, as well as a portion of SNAP benefits for the first time ever because of the big, beautiful bill, do you expect starker cuts in the next couple of years? And if so, wouldn't an income tax exacerbate these commitments that the state must do?
Well, here's, you have to get your arms around two things. One, as you see, and I mentioned, Auditor Fitzpatrick has done a report saying that we're on a bad path to have an incredible budget problem. And taking these incremental steps like we're doing this year and likely have to do next year, I think helps us get to that balanced budget. But you have to embrace with the income tax whether you think putting that money back in Missourians' hands will ultimately be better for our state's economy. Does it keep more families here? Does it encourage young people to move here? Does it encourage older adults who are selling their business that might move to Florida for 6 months in one day? Do they stay here? We believe that it will grow our state's population, and when you grow our state's population, good things start happening.
If the budget situation is becoming dire, why include $60 million for tuition scholarship for K-12 schools? Isn't that something that could be excised for more important priorities, especially since you're cutting the budget elsewhere?
Well, I think if you talk to the parents who have been able to take advantage of those ESAs, you will find out that they were in an environment there where a school system was not able to teach and stand up to the needs of their children had. And we believe that choice is a good thing for our Missourians to have.
And why is $60 million and not the $100 million that Treasurer Vivek Malik is asking for?
Well, and God love Vivek. He's done a great job administering that program. He's very clear that he'd like to have more resources there. We're in a tight budget year, so we're trying to make sure we can still continue to operate that program and have an increase to it.
Your budget includes an additional $86 million for debris removal in St. Louis to help residents recover from the tornado. And that's in addition to the $100 million the legislature approved in the special session back in June, as well as a tax credit for insurance deductibles. Do you foresee the state will have to continue to use general revenue money to help pay for this tornado damage?
Well, remember, there's a federal match to a lot of that. So the federal match will help us. We're very grateful to the administration and Secretary Noem specifically, who's been contacting us, along with Senator Schmidt, who's done a really good job of making sure that we utilize all of the federal resources available to us. But, you know, look, St. Louis is going to have to get rebuilt. We saw this in Joplin, unfortunately, in 2011, and so our state's been through it before, and that community needs to be rebuilt, and I believe Missourians will support helping others in a time of natural disaster.
Speaking of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, she has said in the past that she wants state and local governments to take more responsibility for disaster response, and in theory, I think that makes sense because the first people who are on hand at a disaster are local and state officials, but elected leaders from both parties, and that includes Josh Hawley, Sam Graves, Wesley Bell, have told me they think FEMA's response to the tornado has been woefully inadequate and exacerbated, Democrats make this point, by Trump's staffing cuts at FEMA. Do you think the state has had to pick up the slack here because the federal government hasn't delivered?
Well, I think the federal government in multiple programs is trying to get back to letting the states operate in their state what they think works the best. I can tell you from serving on Missouri's Highway Commission, sometimes the federal government puts resources towards something the state really doesn't need. So having more of this kind of block grant mentality where the funds are there for us to decide how we use, in this case, for cleanup and other things, I think gives us more flexibility.
I mean, you've been to North St. Louis recently. Do you think do you think that the recovery has gone well? Because if you talk with actual residents, they think it's gone way too slowly. And they will also say that they've had a lot of problems with getting aid from FEMA just through the paperwork and the morass.
I've been through St. Louis multiple times, and I will continue to go multiple times. Unfortunately, in a time of a disaster of this magnitude and the tens of thousands of buildings that weren't just that were structurally hurt, it takes a while to rebuild that, and so it always is going to seem like anything never moves fast enough. We're working very hard. We need these right of entry farms. You'll probably hear a lot about that in the upcoming months and maybe year, that allows some of our folks to get onto those properties to make sure we do a proper assessment. We've struggled trying to get some of those collected, but everybody and their brother is trying to get this thing to move as fast as they can. And because I'm from that area, it's very personal to me, and we're going to do the best we can to focus on it.
You mentioned AI in your speech, particularly in how it can help certain state governmental agencies, but all around the state, in red counties and blue counties, there is a lot of heartburn over the creation of data centers that take up a lot of space and a lot of energy. President Trump has called for bans on the state regulating AI, which would include regulating data centers. Do you think that local communities in particular should have a say over whether these facilities get built?
Well, I think there's a lot of misinformation out there about data centers. If you look at the investment that comes with some of these, they're in the billions, $10 to $20 billion for some of these projects. We passed, the legislature passed, I will give them credit, Senate Bill 4 that gives consumer protections on those energy costs. So as we develop infrastructures to support the data centers, it's not being on the backs of the consumers. I think that's very important. There's some information, not misinformation about water use, et cetera. But yes, at the end of the day, a community, and especially their elected officials who are elected to make those decisions, they're going to have to try to figure out what fits their communities best.
So you are not in favor of like local communities not being able to regulate or approve these data centers?
Well, I'm in favor of local elected officials being able to listen to the folks that were elected them so that they can find out what's best. But they also have a real challenge of getting ahead of the social media misinformation kind of campaign that came out that has been very difficult to get accurate information to people about these data centers and then let them make a decision after they have accurate information.
Are you anticipating legislation that would regulate the use of AI? I know there's legislation addressing Waymo. There's lots of things kind of dealing with technology. Are you anticipating any legislation on that despite President Trump's executive order that's banning regulation of AI?
Well, remember, as a conservative, I think less government is better. So more statutes and regulation we have makes me nervous personally, especially as a small business owner. But that's why we formed this task force that we started, that we signed an executive order on today, not only to find out where AI could have efficiencies, but how do we make sure we protect consumers and their privacy as we utilize AI to make the state government more efficient.
When you said during your speech that you wanted to go all in on nuclear, would that include allowing a company like Ameren the ability to pass on the construction costs of a new nuclear reactor over to consumers through higher rates?
Yeah, the Senate Bill 4 that we passed has consumer protections in it. I think that was a very well-balanced bill that consumer groups and utility providers both worked on very hard. Look, rates are going to go up, unfortunately, in electricity because the demand is huge. How many people are powering or charging a phone or a car or you name it while we're talking here. So the thing is you want to make sure that they're controlled and measured so that they're not spiking. Again, that's what Senate Bill 4 does. And the ability for any utility, whether it's a co-op or an investor-owned utility like Ameren, to be able to make sure that they do something that's responsible for their consumers, that's what that measure is all about.
So last year's session was without question fruitful from a policy perspective, but it also required Republicans to cut off Democratic filibusters on congressional redistricting, a near total ban on abortion, which will go to voters, and a measure making it harder to improve some constitutional amendments, also to go to voters. Senate Democrats may retaliate by slowing down proceedings and jeopardizing some of your agenda. How worried are you that the zeal to pass controversial things in 2025 could put 2026 at risk agenda-wise?
Well, look, I've been around this building for a long time. There's ups and downs. It's all about relationships, and I would encourage the Senate, and I know they will, because I know the leadership from both parties will work very hard to try to figure out what the best path is to fix those relationships and actually get something done for Missourians.
So when addressing the press last week, Senate Republicans said that property taxes were a really big priority. They actually listed that first before they went to income taxes. What is that something that you were interested in looking into? What would property tax policy look like for you that you would want to see?
I mean, there's very few Missourians, and it's a bipartisan very few Missourians, who actually like property taxes. Nobody likes paying any kind of tax, much less property taxes. It gets back to there's some tools that you can use, but because some of these are so local, some of the property tax that were driven, whether it's for school districts or emergency management or different things that some of those counties have, it there's over 1,000 different tax codes within the 114 counties. So it's complicated, but it is something that I know that's a huge want for the legislature, if nothing else, just to try to figure out if there's ways to cap some of those increases. So especially with our senior population, our veterans, we don't see these huge spikes in some of their property tax bills.
What is the message that you would like Missourians to take away from your speech today?
Well, the message should be that we're going to deal with their taxpayer dollars fiscally responsible. We're not going to just continue to spend money because it's their money. And I think if they look at the model that we're looking at, it's like the average household sometimes faces in Missouri. Their bills are too high, so they got to cut those down, but they're going to try to figure out a way for the family to make more money. And I think the income tax provides an opportunity for that second piece of that to happen, for those families to keep more of the money that they earned in their pocket. And I hope we can get that through the legislature to actually see if that effect helps families.
That was Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe speaking Tuesday with STLPR politics correspondent Jason Rosenbaum and State House reporter Sarah Kellogg. Kehoe spoke about priorities he outlined in his 2026 State of the State address, which he delivered at the state capitol in Jefferson City. And here to reflect on his conversation with the governor is St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum. Jason, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kehoe wants voters to decide whether to phase out income tax over 5 years. And income tax makes up nearly two-thirds of state revenue. So to make up that source of money, Kehoe proposed expanding the sales tax to include monthly subscriptions and digital services. So Jason, you pushed Kehoe on whether taxing digital goods would be enough to fill a nearly $9 billion revenue hole without also increasing property taxes, healthcare, and agriculture. What did you make of his answer?
I wasn't really convinced, to be honest with you, Elaine. I think that a $9 billion hole is something that is going to be very daunting to fill. And as much as I would like to think that putting a sales tax on monthly subscriptions to Audible, or as I said in the interview, Fortnite Battle Pass, I think it's going to require a lot more than that. And I think from seeing the early iterations of the ballot proposal, it wouldn't have those exceptions in there. It would really just be up to the legislature in Kehoe to not place the expanded sales tax on the things he mentioned in his speech. So I think that is one of the unknown questions here about whether that's going to be enough.
Now, in conversation with Kehoe, Jason, you mentioned how in 2016, Missourians overwhelmingly voted to prohibit the state from adding sales tax to additional services. Do you think the political landscape has changed enough in the last 10 years for voters to support an expansion of sales taxes this time around?
I think it remains to be seen. The specific measure you're talking about barred the state from expanding sales taxes to services. And what was provided as examples during the time was lawn care or haircuts or things that people do for other people, not like buying an Owala water bottle, which happens to be right in front of me and is the best example of a tangible item I can think of at the moment. This was not a very high-profile ballot initiative, so it's possible that if it is marketed as in exchange for expanding sales taxes on these things that you weren't paying before, you won't have an income tax. It could potentially be something that Missourians warm up to, but I think the whole question of whether that's going to be enough over time to completely or even come close to filling the hole that'll be left by the income tax, I don't think that really that will be answered even if this passes, because it'll be up to the legislature to make sure that the tax expansion is robust enough to fill in the budget hole.
Before we move on to other topics covered in your conversation with Governor Mike Kehoe on Tuesday, I'd like to note to listeners that we'd like to hear from you on this topic. Do you support an elimination of the income tax as well as an expansion of the sales tax? Email us your thoughts at talk@stlpr.org. Again, that's talk@stlpr.org. Jason, getting back to your sit-down with Governor Kehoe, his budget includes more funds to remove debris from last May's tornado in St. Louis. What did you make of Kehoe's reflection on how tornado recovery is going for affected St. Louis residents and of his suggested budget allocations?
I think it was actually a pretty honest assessment of the situation. He has been very much on top of trying to get the most resources for St. Louis. Now, you could say that at the beginning of last year's special session, he might have shortchanged St. Louis by only offering a certain amount of money, but eventually he accepted offering more money and also a tax credit for insurance deductibles, which is very impactful for people that, you know, had to shell out $2,500 or $5,000. But I also think he is a realist. And if you drive around St. Louis right now, it's hard to really make an argument that the recovery is going spectacularly, given that there are still people living in homes that have basically not been repaired. And I think that's more of an indictment of the federal government, of them not being proactive or aggressive enough to try and get all the debris or all the repairs done as quickly as possible. I understand that it's not going to be done immediately. I understand that, like, there has to be a process done because you don't want money to be embezzled or wasted, but it's really hard to make an argument that, like, the federal government has done enough. And I think it's placed more onus on the state government and the city government. And I think that that is sort of reflected in the governor's comments.
Jason Rosenbaum is STLPR's politics correspondent. Jason, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
And I, our executive producer, Alex Hoyer. Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.